Hi, and welcome to Zed Games. Recorded live at 4ZZZ Studios in Brisbane and broadcast nationally over the Community Radio Network, Zed Games brings you the latest gaming news, reviews, and interviews from across Australia and around the world.
Hello, hello, welcome, greetings. This is Zed Games, Australia's favourite gaming radio show. Very special episode for you guys. It's our 250th episode. It's our last content episode for the year, and we're presenting our Game of the Year as well. So I am Razor, and in the studio with me, I have my colleagues, friends, and awesome humans. To my left, Candy Payne.
Hi.
Across from me, Mr. Lee.
Hey, hey.
Alana Pierce.
Hello.
And Joni McGregor.
Hello.
Jodie McGregor. Sorry, I said Joni.
Close enough.
Okay, as I mentioned, we'll be going around and each nominating our individual favorite games of the year. So that's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Just like my monologues.
Is this why I generally introduce the episodes?
Yes.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right.
That's right.
I think what Razor's trying to say is if you haven't already jumped on to our Facebook's page, you probably should. And, I don't know, let us know what your Game of the Year was. Doesn't have to be because it was spectacular. What was your favourite? Something like that. Let us know. We might read it out.
Yeah, or you can tweet us, ZGamesAU. And, yeah, if we catch it before the show ends, we'll read yours out as well. We'll also be hearing our last game review of the year. Mr. Jody will be reviewing Valkyria Chronicles, the PC version that was recently released.
Yeah, that's right. It was originally a PS3 strategy game that finally came to PC just last month.
But before all that, let's kick this episode off with the weekend gaming news headlines. Ms. Candy Payne?
Thank you. Google's 2014 Year in Review has revealed the top 10 most searched for items this year, with mobile title Flappy Bird coming in at number 6, ahead of Eurovision winner Conchita Wurst, Isis, the Sochi Olympics, and Frozen. Developed by Lone creator Dong Nguyen in only 3 days, the game went viral, polarising audiences with its frustrating difficulty. Shortly after Nguyen pulled the game from both the App Store and Google Play, reportedly disliking the attention both marketplaces were flooded with the Flappy Bird clones. The top three most searched for terms on Google this year were Robin Williams, World Cup, and Ebola. Hatred, the controversial game where you play as a mass murderer, has returned to Steam Greenlight after being removed just 24 hours prior. A statement from Steam read, "Based on what we've seen on Greenlight, we would not publish Hatred on Steam. As such, we'll be taking it down." Before being pulled, it was the 7th most wanted game on Greenlight, a service that allows users to vote for the games that they'd like to see published through leading digital game client Steam. No reason for the reinstatement has been given at this stage.
Some really gross comments since it's come back up on the Greenlight page as well, on the Steam forums. A lot of people suggesting all the social justice warriors and similar that they would like to be able to murder in the game. So good work with that, Steam.
This is one of the first times I've ever pulled a game as well, and my only thing now is that they're totally going to get more support because it was pulled and then put back up.
Yeah, there is so much media attention on this game now that it's impossible for it to fail.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
I mean, that's what they courted in the first place, and it's just gross that now we ourselves are playing into their hands.
And finally, the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History has acquired one of the buried E.T. game cartridges that were unearthed from a landfill in New Mexico desert earlier this year. The game cartridge was selected for preservation for personifying the video game crash of the mid-80s and will be displayed alongside other American cultural artifacts, including spacesuits from the Apollo mission, the hat that Abraham Lincoln was wearing when he was killed, and the original sheet music for Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
That's the right place for it.
Yep.
I bet the guy who spent the 45 minutes to create that game is real proud of himself.
He had 2 weeks, and yep. I don't think he is.
And now he's up there with Abe Lincoln's hat.
What do we got? We have a review now. Jody McGregor, you have been playing what exactly? Something.
I've been playing Valkyria Chronicles, which is a Japanese strategy game that originally came out on the PS3 in 2008 and finally got a PC port. People have been waiting a pretty long time because strategy game fans tend to be on the PC rather than the PS3, so it was kind of weird that it was a console exclusive in the first place. Kind of weird sums it up, really. Valkyria Chronicles is a World War II turn-based strategy game, but set in a fictional version of World War II that takes place in Europa rather than Europe. And
it's nice
rewrites history and has different names for all of the countries. So instead of fighting the Nazis, you're fighting the Imperians from the Eastern Empire. And the main characters are from a made-up country called Gallia, which is like, it has the history of Belgium and the sort of the windmills of Holland. It starts out neutral, like Switzerland. It's just sort of this weird mashup. You know how in Western fantasy games, there's always the Far East, and it's this lame mashup of, like, we just put some stuff from China and Japan together.
Yeah.
As if that totally works. This is the same thing in reverse. This is Japanese developers who have very vague ideas about what Europe in 1938 was like, changing all of the names and smooshing everything together in a way that's really, really silly.
It sounds cool.
Mm.
It sounded cool. I was pretty excited about it before I actually played it.
Oh.
This is not going the direction we were hoping.
No, it's one of the biggest disappointments of the year for me. As a turn-based strategy game, it's a real letdown. There's a you send out your squad of no-hopers with rifles and sort of stylized but still very 1938-looking tanks, and you move them one at a time, but instead of having the ability to move each unit once per turn, you have command points that you can spend to move them. And so you can spend like 3 command points on just moving one guy 3 times.
Oh. So like action points?
Yeah. So you don't have to move everyone. And in fact, that's actually the worst way to play. The computer will often spend 3 command points on just moving a sniper 3 times and then shooting one guy in the head 3 times.
Mm.
Which means that if you want somebody to die, they're pretty much just dead.
Mm.
There's no way to protect against a sniper shooting you in the
head
3 times.
Because they can
move so many times. Yeah. Mm. It's a really odd idea, and it discourages you from using all of those scrubs and noobs at the back of your squad. Normally, in a strategy game, you have to find uses for even your stock standard generic infantry, because everybody has to do something on a turn. But in this, you just wind up reusing the same characters over and over. If you spend more than one command point on a character, they do move slightly less each time, but they still get to attack. So the first move, you get them into position, and then you just attack over and over again. And that's really the way the computer plays as well. It's the way the game encourages you to play. And it's much less satisfying than advancing an entire squad upwards.
It's actually really odd. I can't think of any other turn-based game where that has been a feature, because you're basically defenseless the minute that there is someone who is vaguely near you. If they can attack you 3 times in a row, that just doesn't... I can't think of anything else I've ever played that's like that.
Yeah, it's unique.
Yes, to put it politely.
Yeah.
So it also, though, has, outside of the tactical stuff, there's a lot of troop management stuff. There's a lot of, like, weird, like, manga stuff going on in there as well, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Those battles are actually a really minor part of the game.
Hmm.
I'm used to Japanese games having 10-minute-long cutscenes, but in Valkyria Chronicles, between each of those battles, you have, like, 5 2-minute cutscenes instead. And they just go on and on. There are so many of them. It's like they really wanted to make an anime series, and then they had to squeeze some game stuff into it. It's not a particularly good anime series, though. It's full of cliches and melodrama. There's the cute animal sidekick who makes annoying noises all of the time.
What animal is it?
It's a Porkavian, which is a flying pig.
Oh, my God.
They didn't even... Chosen like a wolf or something.
No, they chose the Porkavian, which is the best idea.
Wow.
I'm looking at a picture of it right now.
It makes this annoying moink noise, which just goes on and on. And there's the scene where the girl who wants to impress the boy makes a meal for him and then is very worried about whether he likes it or not. It's all, if you've seen any anime series in the last 10 years, you've seen all of this stuff play out, but probably with better translation and voice
acting.
What
does she cook?
She bakes him bread.
Oh, God.
That's nice. Freshly baked bread is lovely. But yes, I am familiar with that weird stress where there's all of these women in anime who just dote over all the male characters and cry during.
Oh, God, yes.
They're just like, please love me.
Yes.
My brother.
Not just me. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it's like.
So how does the story actually tie in with the gameplay? Does it flow well?
Sort of. The missions do get shoehorned in sometimes. So there was a mission, for instance, where it's like, here's your token stealth mission. And so in one of the cutscenes, there's a completely random explosion, and then two characters get separated from the group. So then you just control those two characters, and you have to sneak past a bunch of guards before you can reunite them with the rest of your squad. But that cutscene with the random explosion that separates them did feel completely disconnected from everything else that was happening. And that mission was the worst. When you're moving your troops, the enemies have this kind of Overwatch thing. Whoever's moving will get shot at continuously by any enemy who's in range, rather than setting up Overwatch by like saving some of your movement. It's just an automatic thing that happens continuously. So you can never stop. And once you've finished your turn, you have to hammer the end turn button as quickly as possible, because if you delay in doing that, you'll just get shot while you're doing it. Like, one of the main skills you have to learn is hammering the end turn button really quickly and going into aim mode very quickly, because when you aim, they also stop shooting at you. It's the only respite that you get. And when you aim, it goes into first person, and you actually line up your shot, like seeing through the scope of your weapon, and then you get dumped back into a third-person view where everyone is shooting at the character who's moving. Again, it's a really weird idea, and I was intrigued by how different it was, but then in play, it's just incredibly frustrating to have like an entire army shooting at the one guy whose turn it is, and then you finish that turn and then everyone shoots at the next guy. It's really jarring.
But I do tend to get really frustrated in games where all of the enemies just politely stop attacking me because I'm attacking one guy. That happens in like virtually every third-person action adventure where you start, like, if you're merely attacking one guy, everyone else is like, oh, okay, let's just back up 3 meters before they actually attack you again. So
yeah,
I guess
here
maybe
comes Batman, we're going to back
yeah,
off.
Let's, oh, yeah, hang on, he's hitting that guy, let's leave him alone. It doesn't make any sense. So maybe they were kind of trying to find a middle ground there, but failed.
Yeah, it feels super weird that everybody only attacks the guy who's moving.
Yeah.
Like, there's all of these other guys all around them, and the fact that it's continuous means that you have to take your turns really quickly. You don't get to do the strategic, tactical thinking stuff that's fun about
you,
a strategy
you
game.
Be stressed.
You have to run everyone and then end turn super quick.
Unless you just constantly stay aiming, and then everybody just backs off and lets you get your aim lined
Which
up.
Totally makes sense.
Yeah, because that's exactly how battles happen. Yeah, like everyone's like, "Well, hang on, he's just adjusting
just
the viewfinder.
Let him
line it up." Rubbish. Sorry.
So I guess because it sounds like not great in every aspect. What's one thing that you really like about it? Is the music good?
The music's kind of generic and forgettable. What I like about it is that...
nice try, though.
Yeah.
It uses the twisted history that it's made up to give you a cast of characters who, like, half of your squad is made up of women. In this fantasy Europa, sexism just doesn't exist, and so half of the army is women, and it's never explained, and there's never any, like, reason for it. It's just like, well, why bother? We're making up all of the names. Why not just make half of the characters women?
It's good, actually, it's nice because if they explained it, it would be like, sorry, there are women here. We better justify it.
Mm. Yeah, it would
they
be
just
like...
did it without explanation. It's kind of nice.
Mm-hmm. They also, though, as part of the World War II background, there is an ethnic minority who are like the analogue for Jewish people, this made-up group called the Darksons, and the way that's handled really is less progressive and is actually kind of creepy and gross. Yeah.
Right.
That's...
it is unfortunate, yes.
Moving on.
Yeah, I don't really want to ask. Yeah.
Okay, well, any closing remarks that you have, Jody? Valkyria Chronicles for the PC?
Not really. That's the worst game I played all year, and I played War of the Vikings. So I played Thief. I played the Thief remake.
I didn't think that was that bad.
It was pretty bad.
Would
though.
You recommend it to anyone?
Absolutely nobody. Unless you really like terrible anime series.
I'm
and
so
are willing,
into that.
And are willing to like sit through a C-list Neon Genesis Evangelion with
I know
tanks.
People that are.
Yeah, yeah, no, lots of people are. It was very popular, I think, for exactly that reason.
What about, like, flying pig enthusiasts?
That is cute, though.
Yeah.
Lee has a picture up on his phone.
If you like cute flying pigs, it does have one of those.
Right.
Is Hans actually his name?
Yeah.
Oh, glorious.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Jody. You are listening to Zed Games on Triple Z 102.1 FM. My name's Razor. In the studio with me, Candy Payne, Alana Pierce, Jody McGregor, and Mr. Lee. The song we just heard was from the Danganronpa soundtrack. That was actually the theme. I was mistaken earlier. The name of the song wasn't Masafumi Takada. That is indeed the composer of the song. I am on fire.
You got there in the end.
Champagne Radio.
Lucky it's the last episode.
So we're about to discuss our favorite games of 2014, this being the last episode of the year. It has been an interesting year in games. I thought 1 year into the next generation of consoles, I thought we'd be in the future. You know, I thought this gaming landscape would be very, very different, but it turns out
that... It feels like we've gone backwards a little bit.
A little bit. Well,
we spent a lot of time waiting for games to install.
We've been kind of gently eased into the new generation with like old remakes of old games and games that come out on all the consoles and are therefore not as good on the new ones. But that said, there has been plenty of great games worth talking about, and we'll talk about a few of them right now. Let's start with Mr. Lee.
Me?
Yeah, why not?
All right.
You're in front of me.
Yeah, I am in front of you.
What games were you considering when you thought about your favorite game of this year?
Yeah, for me, 2014 was interesting. I thought about Wasteland 2, I thought about Divinity,
yep.
I thought about the new Dragon Age, but in the end, it came down to, I think, Shadow of Mordor introducing something that I'd not really seen done before, and then also stealing from a lot of good or popular games, and then doing all of those things that it stole much better than them. So, yeah, Shadow of Mordor basically did Assassin's Creed right, and then included Batman's stealth and combat and did that with its own unique style, but then also gave me this whole new concept of an enemy that grows and remembers our interactions and turns up right when I don't want them to, just to taunt me. And that's great. Why, like, everyone should be stealing from this, like, right now. Every game that comes out in 2015 should have its own nemesis system in it. Mm. You know, give it a different name. Every game needs to do that, because it just adds to the player's investment in their struggle. It's great.
When you say it takes the climbing from Assassin's Creed and makes it better, I'm enjoying the climbing in Shadow of Mordor, because, as people won't know, I only just started playing it, but I find that it's really easy. Like, it almost feels pointless because it's so easy.
But it exists to allow you to get into a vantage point to then commit an assassination.
So I suppose it's not meant to be a major part of the gameplay like it is in Assassin's Creed, where it's part of the puzzle. Because in Shadow of Mordor, it's just...
Yeah.
You can't really screw it up.
Shadow of Mordor is like I went back to play it after playing through both Assassin's Creed Rogue and Unity recently, and Shadow is so much easier to actually do the thing that you want to do.
That's true. Doesn't go the wrong way for no reason.
Yeah, you shouldn't still be wrestling with the controls as you do in Assassin's Creed Unity. There's none of that in this. You go exactly where you want to go, and then you end up doing exactly what you want to do.
That is true.
Yeah, so it's not an impediment. So, hooray!
Yay for being able to climb.
Yeah.
Now, how about you, Ms. Candy Payne? What game did you arrive at for your Game of the Year 2014?
Well, having done this for a couple of years here now, I went against all of my thinking that I've put into why I like other games and why I've reported on other games, and I just went with what the hell was the most fun for me. And I have to say, it was The Wolf Among Us. It wasn't hard for me, to absolutely love that kind of 80s feel, the music, you know, the colours, like this kind of always pinkish, bluish, orange undertones in all of the scenes. And, you know, playing through it and looking at the characters, you know, if you haven't played it, oh my God, for the love of God, get out there and play it. It was so much fun. It's from the Telltale guys, and it comes in its 5 episodes, and you play as Bigby Wolf, the big bad wolf, and you're investigating fables, deaths, murders, that's kind of thing. And so it's Oh my gosh, it was just the most fun. I loved the characters and I loved how it kind of took me maybe three quarters of the way through each episode to just go, oh, that guy, that's from, you know, that's from that rhyme, or Georgie Porgy Pudding and Pie, or like, you know, and it suddenly just clicks in, and because you don't know it looking at all of the characters what fable they're from, and it's just, but it's just so beautifully done, and it was the most fun I've had just remembering, like, fables from my youth as well, you know, as well as it being like a murder investigation and that kind of thing. It was fun.
Yeah. The Wolf Among Us was definitely one of the games I was considering when I was thinking about what my game of the year was. And Telltale actually rose up, it climbed up the ladder of my favorite game publishers, you know, because with The Walking Dead Season 2 and The Wolf Among Us, and then I just played the Borderlands, Tales from the Borderlands last week. They've just put out some incredible content this year. And yeah, actually, The Walking Dead Season 1 was my Game of the Year 2012.
So I've only actually played their Walking Dead games. And do they all play out the same, with the same like choice-based stuff where there's timers on your dialogue and there's this time?
Absolutely. So, and it, which ultimately affects what happens with your character and the situation and the scene. And, you know, you get to choose what you want to investigate first. Is it somebody's apartment, or is it Twiddledee and Twiddledum? Or, you know, like, there's this, all of those kinds of great choices that you get to make. And it's one of the ones that, compared to Walking Dead, I didn't care so much for what, how my choices stacked up against other players around the world. But, you know, it was nice to know that, like, me and 30% of people beat Twiddledee until he was black and blue. But, you know, it's not, it's irrelevant. It's not the point. I didn't care so much in this one, because I'm playing a big bad wolf, for God's sakes. I didn't care that I was a little bit violent, or, you know. And then I liked that I was sometimes nice when Snow White gave me compliments for being nice. You know, I was like, oh, yeah, okay, I can be nice this time. That's great.
Yeah, I like the way that it takes these familiar fairy tale characters and then turns them into... mushes them together with stereotypes from a noir movie. So, like, Tweedledum and Tweedledee are the two goons, the two
gangster
dumb
goons.
Thugs,
yep.
Because that's
cool.
Exactly what they look like. You just put them in bowler hats and suits, and they are already those guys. And Snow White is like your gal Friday, who's smarter than you, but has a crap job where she has to sit behind a desk all day while you go out and investigate stuff. And then get punched in the head a lot.
Absolutely. And then the subtlest one that I only just realised the other night as well, looking at, you know, Jack the Beanstalk and the Beanstalk character, and it just took me 2 seconds to realise he's standing at the front of a pawn shop in one of the scenes. I'm like, oh, yeah, because he traded the beans, and I don't know, and just suddenly... Yeah. Exactly, little things that I didn't pick up, and then I've gone back through it again just to pick some different choices, and I've just gone, oh, got it, now I got it, or, you know, loved it.
Yeah, that's cool.
A little bit sad about The Little Mermaid, though. She doesn't have a happy life. With legs. But, you know, play it. If you haven't played it, we're not going to ruin it. That's my only feedback.
Thank you, Candy. Alana, I heard that you agonized for a while and you only made your choice, what, about 35 minutes ago?
About 35 minutes ago. So mine was between, similar to Lee, I suppose, I had Divinity Original Sin, Wasteland 2, Gods Will Be Watching, and now, most recently, Papers, Please, as that's just re-released on iPad December 12th, and this is my first time playing it, and I love it. But for purely selfish reasons, my pick for Game of the Year is South Park: The Stick of Truth, and that's because I absolutely love the South Park universe, and I couldn't be more happy with the way it was adapted into a game. But that said, it's not the kind of thing I would recommend to everyone, and I know it has flaws. It just... I want to play it again, I really do, and I want to play it as a Jew this time and see the way that changes the South Park world's interactions with you, because apparently it's done in really good ways, in ways that, like, Jewish people have played it and really like the way that they change the dialogue to suit that religion, and I think that's awesome. So it's basically just like a South Park episode where something goes horribly wrong in South Park and everyone's really dumb about it and they don't realize the truth of what's actually happened, where I think they think that there's a new Taco Bell being set up or something and it's actually like a crashed alien ship. And of course Randy Marsh is there like, oh no, that new Taco Bell, huh? And they just won't let you pass security, so you play as like a new kid in the town and you have to make friends with everyone. And I guess when it turns to combat, which is actually because the crashed alien spaceship ends up... It's so much to explain. I hadn't thought of how ridiculous this was until now, in that there are, like, zombie Nazis everywhere, and you have to fight a lot of them. And so it swaps into, like, turn-based combat, quite like a JRPG, I guess, where you're just walking through a street and trying to get to a certain place, and then it snaps, and there's this lightning, and you go into a different screen. And you've got mana. I'm not sure if it's called mana. Mana. You've got a ranged weapon, a regular weapon, and then you've got like a special attack, and you've got farts, which are a thing. And
that's like a specialist attack.
I think
farts are your magic.
Are they?
Yeah.
Farts are your dragon shouts, but you also
your dragon
have magic.
Shouts. You have mana as well,
just like in Skyrim.
Yes.
It's
yeah.
A parody of Skyrim there.
Yes.
We're still
well
talking
done.
About South Park.
Yes. What? Yes, we are. It's very in-depth. In the combat, I had a few issues where sometimes you'd tap the button when it told you to in like little QT-type sequences and it wouldn't quite pick up on it. But for the most part, it was extremely creative, and the way that it functioned was also really challenging for a game where you have to fight Al Gore at one part. Of course, because you add him on Facebook accidentally and he won't leave you alone. Uh-huh. So you have to, like, go and fight Al Gore to get him to stop writing status updates about Man Bear Pig, which I just think is fantastic, but people who aren't into South Park will have no idea what I'm talking about. And so you go and fight him, and it's just ridiculously hard. You have to make sure that someone... there's one of the characters you can have as a sidekick, which is like the main group, can heal you. Kenny can die and then come back, so he's a really good asset to have in a really hard fight because he can come back and then give you a potion or a revive thing so that you can keep the two people that you have alive throughout this fight with Al Gore. And it was actually like really intense. It would swap between being this dumb, lighthearted thing that totally is like a really in-depth South Park episode to being really difficult combat. And overall, I mean, I didn't want to stop playing it. And as soon as I finished it, I went back and did all the side quests that I had. Like, I think you had to look for Mr. Hanky in the sewer and find his family. And there was a weird domestic fight there that was interesting. And it was just so, so accurate to the way that the South Park universe actually is. And I loved my time being there, especially when I went to Canada, which was
the Canada
truly
sequence.
Amazing.
Yeah, so good. Yep. Canada was great.
Yeah. You kind of don't want to talk about it, just if you haven't played it, go to Canada, and you'll have a great time. So yeah, South Park, and I think probably close second is Wasteland 2, and then after that would probably be Divinity Original Sin, but overall I actually felt like this year was kind of mediocre.
A lot of role-playing games in there, though.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, they're all role-playing games, actually. Yeah. Interesting. It hadn't even occurred to me.
Well, you know, a lot of games were delayed until 2015.
Yeah.
So... Mm. Apparently it's
we've had a lot of buggy
year.
Games. Like, I'm sure I would have liked Murdered Soul Suspect a lot more if it didn't have these dumb bugs all through it.
Mm. Yep.
And Unity, of course, full of bugs as well. And
we had a lot of big releases that turned out to be
not
victims
good.
Victims of their own hype.
Watch Dogs.
Yeah.
Destiny.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, we might take a musical break now. You are still listening to Zed Games on Triple Z 102.1 FM. When we return, Jody and myself will be nominating our favourite game of the year. And we'll also hear from you. Yes, that's right, you. When you logged on to Facebook and messaged us, you gave us permission to read your stuff out on air. So we'll be hearing from you later.
Oh, welcome back, lovers and listeners. This is Zed Games. It is our 250th episode. Woo, woo, woo. Also, it's our Game of the Year edition. If you've just joined us, that was Ghostly by Ben Benjamin. And right now, we have just a few comments that we found online from you guys about what your favourite games are and why, so might hand over to read them out.
We've got Daniel Ward, who said Dragon Age Inquisition because it's Dragon Age Inquisition, and that's actually a game that I stopped playing because it's so big.
He's right, though.
It is very good.
Yes.
He's right,
yes.
It is Dragon Age Inquisition.
It is definitely Dragon Age Inquisition and hugely in-depth, and the lore is pretty insane. And then we've got Michael, who said Wolfenstein The New Order, which is one that I totally should have mentioned because I loved it. He said, Wolfenstein is, at its core, a game where you steal Hitler's giant nuclear-powered, nuclear-cannon-armed aircraft-carrying submarine in order to access a secret undersea base from which you collect the advanced technology needed to fight a world-spanning alternate history Nazi empire. That is pretty much the game summed up. There was also really good characters in that game. I think the first-person shooter mechanics were fantastic. I really enjoyed that. And then the last one we got here is from Barb, who said Borderlands the pre-sequel. I love the freedom to roam as I please, as with all the Borderlands games, but this one has the awesome Aussie accents and references. You can butt slam. The jump pads are so much fun, and Boganella is freaking hilarious.
I've yet to play that one, but I'm looking forward to checking it out because of Boganella.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Jody really sold me on that.
Mm. And the butt slam.
Is that the talking shotgun?
Yes.
That's
a talking
That's
shotgun.
Boganella. Nice.
Okay, I'd like to talk about my favorite game of the year. Just like Alana, it was quite a difficult decision. I'm always conflicted when I'm thinking back on the year between the games that are mechanically awesome and games that enthralled me with their story.
Yeah, like games that you think a lot of people would like and that you want everyone to play, and games that you personally really
like.
Yeah,
and you know, the game that I would admit to liking on the radio as well. All of these things come into consideration. So,
your secret favourite is the Kim Kardashian game, right?
Yeah.
Apparently that's really good. Yeah. I've heard it's really good.
No, but the two games that I was, you know, had in either hand were Hearthstone, Blizzard's collectible card game, which is so freaking awesome and addictive, and it just pushes all of the buttons that that I love about games. And on the other side, Danganronpa, which was a visual novel that kind of flew underneath most people's radar, published on the PS Vita only.
So, drumroll, Razor, what did you choose?
I went for Danganronpa, which kind of acts as a proxy for both Danganronpa and Danganronpa 2.
But why?
It is... There's no other game like it, although it's kind of one of those games where you can see the influences. It's like crypt from a bunch of games, but in doing so, it's created a thing that is totally original. Mm. So the three games that it crypts from are Persona 4, Zero Escape, Virtue's Last Reward, and the Ace Attorney Phoenix Wright series.
Ooh, sounds good.
Mm. So it's basically a bunch of kids that have been imprisoned in a school. The only way to
get... That's the Persona 4 part?
No, it's more the Zero Escape
sort of
thing.
Okay, I haven't played
that. It's basically Battle
He's
Royale.
He's getting to it.
Sorry, I'm so excited.
It's basically Battle Royale, so the kids are imprisoned and they have to kill each other, which sounds awful. But there's also a twist. They have to do it in a way that they can get out of it without anyone else knowing. Mm. So they have to do it secretly. And after each murder, there's a class trial, and they each go around the circle and interrogate each other. And if they can't arrive at a conclusion of who the killer is, then, or if they get it wrong, then they all die. They all get killed.
Whoa.
But if the person gets away with it, then he or she, and only he or she, can leave the facility. So the trial sections are like these kind of Ace Attorney-ish, like trials where all these facts come up, and what you have to do is shoot down the facts with your truth bullets, and you gain truth bullets by going around the world in first person looking for evidence and getting testimonies and stuff like that. And it sounds crazy, and it is, and it's awesome, but you know...
Well, you haven't even got to the craziest bit yet.
Yeah.
Who's keeping them trapped in this school?
It's a mechanical bear.
Go on.
Called Monokuma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And he's psychotic, and he cracks a lot of jokes, a lot of bad jokes, and, you know, in between every day, he does little skits, and...
How is he keeping them trapped there?
Well, all the windows are boarded up, the doors are locked, and they kind of woke up there, and they don't know how they woke up there.
Right. And is he filming it or something, or is he just crazy?
Yeah, there's cameras everywhere, and they don't know whether it's some sort of sick Hunger Games-like TV show, or if he's just watching them because he's a pervert.
A pervert mechanical bear.
Yep.
Okay.
If he's mechanical, does he hibernate?
Does he hibernate?
It's an important question.
No, because I can see where you're going with this.
No, that's not safe for radio, Candy.
I was just asking, like, is there ever a chance where he starts to doze off and you can get out that way?
Look, to say any more would be to spoil the story, which is the best aspect of this game. Basically, I wanted to know what was going to happen. I couldn't put the game down. The characters, they start off like all cliches, like they're all the ultimate in their field. Like there's the ultimate swimmer, the ultimate fanfic writer, the ultimate motorbike gang leader and stuff like that. So they sound like cliches, but as you get to know them, there's actually quite a lot of depth to their personality, which is where the Persona stuff comes in. You feel like you're really interacting with these people, and there's just enough. It's largely a story where you're taken from the start to the finish, but there's just enough interaction to make you feel really invested, more so than a TV series or a film.
So do you also kill people?
That might be one of the things that I shouldn't mention.
Okay. Well, it sounds amazing.
Yeah. It's really fun. And unfortunately, because it was released on the PS Vita and because it's a low-key title, not many people got to play it, but I'm so glad I did, and I wouldn't recommend in... I wouldn't hesitate in recommending it to anyone if you have a PS Vita.
Maybe I'll get one, just for this.
Now, Jody, you're the last one. You have yet to talk about your personal Game of the Year 2014.
Mm-hmm. I did have a tough choice. I considered The Walking Dead Season 2. I liked all of the games that Telltale brought out this year, but that was a highlight for me. And I also considered Goat Simulator, which is a very different game.
I really wanted you to choose that just so we could talk about it again.
Well, it was a really funny game, and there aren't enough games as comedy, I think. Mm. Like, what makes Danganronpa sound appealing to me is just how funny the idea is, and the idea of games like the one where you're trapped in a school by a mechanical bear and the one where you're a goat on a rampage who can headbutt cars and make them explode. Those are good ideas for games. And there should be more like them. But the game that I wound up choosing in the end was another role-playing game. It was Shadowrun Dragonfall, which is the cyberpunk fantasy game that's a weird mashup of those two genres. Like, I like fantasy role-playing games. I like it when an elf and a dwarf and a wizard go into a dungeon and kill some monsters and avoid some traps and steal some gold. But I also like those sci-fi games where a bunch of people break into some kind of high-security building and avoid a bunch of lasers and hack some computers and steal a bunch of data. And this smushes those two things together so that you have elven hackers and like a troll sniper and cybered up orcs who do exactly the same kind of things, but the way it smushes those genres together makes for some really intriguingly warped characters. It takes these cliches that we're all familiar with and makes them fresh again, like the evil dragon isn't sitting on a big old pile of gold underneath a mountain somewhere. They have a big old pile of, like, stock in their portfolio, and they're the CEO of a company. And the dwarf master craftsman isn't making magic swords, but, like, ultimate computer hacking programs and viruses, and is some sort of weird Where's Smith. So in Dragonfall, you have this team of Shadowrunners who are like a cross between fantasy adventurers and computer hackers. And you go around breaking into companies and stealing all of their data. And it is like a turn-based fantasy role-playing game dungeon crawl, only without all of the really cliched fantasy trappings that we're all getting a little bit sick of. And the structure of it is really impressive because I think that role-playing games always annoy me with is the way they either give you freedom and a bunch of options to explore or a satisfying but linear story. And you wind up sort of stuck halfway between those two things. Like, there are a lot of games where your map is full of side quests and there's no sense of urgency at all, or where you're getting pushed back into the story all of the time and you don't want to. You want to wander off and do all of the side quests. You're just being shoehorned into this dumb story. And Dragonfall avoids those pitfalls by having a really tightly plotted beginning and ending, and then the middle just cutting you loose. There's a point in the story, it sort of cribs this from Baldur's Gate 2, the bit where you need to raise a bunch of money to pay someone off to help you figure out the identity of this villain who is messing with you and your pals. So you just get like you need 50,000 new yen, go make some money in the city. And then you do all of the side quests until you hit that amount of money. And then when you feel satisfied that you're ready to take on the ending, you just go and pay somebody off. And then you get to fight the final boss and have your ending whenever you want it.
It neatly ties the side quest into the main story, where in others the side quests just kind of feel irrelevant.
Yeah, it makes them fit in. And so you have a time, the entire second act of the game, that's the time when you can chill with your companions and go through all of their dialogue trees and learn all of their dark Bioware-style secrets. And that's the time when you can buy all of the upgrades so that you're ready for the end of it, so that you can wander around helping people out. All of the things that feel like a distraction from saving the world in other role-playing games have a home here. And so they don't feel... You're never brought out of the story by being reminded, oh, this is a game, I need to go and earn some experience points, and all of those things are just going to wait for me. Like, there's an evil dragon who's going to destroy the world, but only when I'm level 20. In this, there's an actual narrative explanation for which makes the ending much more satisfying. It doesn't feel like, I've been playing this game for 50 hours, just make it end. You raise enough money and you hit a point, and then you're like, I could keep going a bit further, or I could just do the ending now, and it's up to you.
Yeah, cool.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Jody. Quite a offbeat selection, I think.
We picked some different games, yeah.
Yeah, like, so just to recap, Lee, your favorite game was Shadow of Mordor.
Mm-hmm.
Candy, yours was The Wolf Among Us.
Yep.
Alana, yours was South Park, The Stick of Truth. Mine was Danganronpa. And Jody was just telling us about Shadowrun Dragonfall.
Mm.
Cool. Well, let's, in 30 seconds, name all of the games that we missed so that people who are listening don't get angry. Now, we considered all of these games. We played a hell of a lot of games this year. And, you know, between the five of us, I'm sure we played, like, hundreds of games.
If we don't mention Mario Kart, a game which we've all played together. Yeah.
Attacked.
It is fantastic.
Blue shells will fly through the window.
Yeah.
So Mario Kart 8, Fable Anniversary, I have to mention because I love Fable TLC. Pokemon, Wolfenstein was really good.
Alien
so much
Isolation.
Pressure. Alien
was
Isolation.
The scariest thing I played all year.
Mm.
Nidhogg. Super
fun. Oh, yeah, Nidhogg
game.
Was so good.
Damn it, what else? This is intense. You said 30 seconds.
Yeah, come on, man.
We did really like playing Gauntlet together. That was another
Gauntlet,
super
Gauntlet
fun multiplayer
enjoyed
experience.
Gauntlet, yeah.
All right.
God damn it.
Our listeners will let us know.
Yeah. Like, you missed all of these things.
You forgot Bayonetta 2.
We did.
Oh, God damn it.
That.
Yes.
Well, we did it. We just said it.
Awesome. Well, that's going to bring us close to the end of this episode of Zed Games, which is our 250th episode. Congrats, guys.
Yay.
It's so also the last episode of the year, so we'll be back on the 7th of January. We'll take some time out. And it is also Alana's last episode for the near future, as she's going overseas for some awesome adventures.
I am, yeah. So I think I've been here for 2 years now, I think. Yeah, and it's been a pretty great 2 years, and I'm gonna miss you guys.
Oh, yeah. I miss you too.
Thanks, Alana.
That's okay.
Yeah, but you'll be in the States doing exciting stuff, and maybe we'll hear from you while you're gone.
Yeah, maybe. We'll have to see.
Yep.
Awesome. Tune in next year.
Alrighty, well, we're just about out of time, guys, but we will catch you next year, and next year is going to be a cracker of a year for games, I'm sure, because all
Witcher
of the...
3.
All the delayed stuff.
All the delayed stuff. Yeah,
No Man's Sky.
Batman.
Evolve was delayed as well.
That's right. Mm.
So, yeah, look forward to all of 2014's big releases next year, 2015.
God, that is going to make Game of the Year next year so difficult.
But better.
Yep.
Alrighty, well, we'll get out of here now. All right, see you guys next year.
Bye.
Bye.